Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with our analysis of the Free Congress Foundation and its political nature. This in opposition to Lisa Dean's column in the San Francisco Examiner, in which she intoned about the need to rein in the Echelon Network and, by extension, Men with Hill, in order to ensure that the civil liberties and the integrity of Americans' democratic rights. I found that very unusual in light of the actual nature of the Free Congress Foundation, and in just a minute, we're going to listen to an excerpt from Radio Free America program number 36 about the destabilization of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. And indeed, the Free Congress Foundation appears to have been deeply involved in both. As I've said before, not only in this program, but in numerous other broadcasts, I think the United States itself is in a state of destabilization by what I call the Underground Reich, and I think the methodology is very similar to the methodology used by the Third Reich to destabilize countries that were larger and more powerful than itself, specifically in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce. I discussed at considerable length the subversion of France prior to the German invasion in 1940. That subversion accomplished through French domestic fascist organizations like the Cagoule or Les Cagoulards and the Croix de Feu or Cross of Fire, both organizations connected with German intelligence. Both organizations were hell-bent to subvert French democracy and to establish fascism, and they felt that working with the German invaders was a very, very good way to do that. I think the United States is undergoing something very similar, and I believe that the Free Congress Foundation is part of this pro-German fifth column within the United States. Note that in April, the Germans formally began their assault propagandistically and journalistically on Men with Hill, and within a few months, the Free Congress Foundation was sounding a very similar tone. I would also note that the Free Congress Foundation was very much involved with the destabilization of the Soviet Union. Hitler, in his speech to the Industry Club of Dusseldorf in 1932, said that democracy was undesirable because it led to communism. And indeed, democracy and socialism were the two great bugaboos for the power elite of the world and the multinational corporations that comprise that elite. And the Soviet Union, the cradle of socialism, is gone, and I think something very similar to that is taking place in the United States, which was the cradle of democracy, as badly abused as our democracy has become. We're going to go now to an excerpt from RFA Program 36. This was recorded on March 10, 1991. RFA 36 was entitled The Destabilization of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. And in turn, you're going to hear some information about the Free Congress Foundation. This coming from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35. That publication is now called Covert Action Quarterly. Now, this article is called The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. Once again, co-authored by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolf, it reads in part as follows. With the rapid pace of political change sweeping Eastern Europe and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, many opportunities have emerged for Western interests to intervene in the politics of that region. In some cases, such a vacuum has been created that virtual strangers to the area several years ago are now able to actively participate in changing those societies from within. These interventions are not only being practiced by mainstream organizations. The involvement of the United States far right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern European and Soviet politics and has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, in the USSR. Now, once again, this is the most important single element in this article on the subject of it, the Free Congress Foundation, and we should bear in mind for future discussion that they are tied directly to Boris Yeltsin, as we shall see. Continuing here with Ballant and Wolf's article, the Free Congress Foundation, or FCF, was founded in 1974 by Paul Weyrich, W-E-Y-R-I-C-H, as the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Weyrich, who had started the Heritage Foundation the year before, was heavily funded by the Coors family for both organizations. I would interrupt that Paul Weyrich is one of the major strategic planners and one of the major figures in the so-called New Right. Why I call it so-called, I will outline here later. He is one of the individuals credited with the political action committees and direct mail techniques which helped boost Ronald Reagan and later George Bush into their present situations. Although, as I've looked at in these archive shows, the stage was set for the Reagan and Bush ascendancy by political assassination, not Paul Weyrich. Continuing here, but it should be noted that in addition to the survival, the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress, now the Free Congress Foundation, Weyrich founded the Heritage Foundation, an absolutely pivotal right-wing think tank, which, again, is very close to both the Reagan and Bush administrations. Continuing here, and bear in mind that this organization, as we shall see, is heavily involved in the Soviet Union, specifically with elements around Boris Yeltsin. Continuing with the article, Weyrich has kept one foot in the right wing of the Republican Party while dallying with the racist right and the extreme Christian right. In 1976, for instance, he and a handful of other new rightists, William Rusher, Morton Blackwell, and Richard Viguerie, attempted to take over the segregationist American Independent Party, or AIP, formed by George Wallace in 1968. The AIP was an amalgam of Ku Klux Klan and John Birch Society elements. In 1982, Weyrich published an essay in which he stated, quote, "Culturally destructive government policies, racial hiring quotas, and busing come to mind as examples, are to the new right more immediately important in the realm of action since the damage they can do is enormous and practically irremediable," unquote. This apparent defense of, quote, white culture, unquote, is dangerously close to theories advocated by white supremacists today. FCF's direct involvement in Eastern Europe began about a year ago at the urging of one of its directors, Robert Kriebel, K-R-I-E-B-L-E, a retired Connecticut businessman. His Kriebel Foundation backed efforts in late 1989 to send Weyrich and four associates to Hungary and the Soviet Union, including Estonia, to help train right-wing leaders in ideological and electoral matters. I would interject here, Estonia is now one of the Baltic republics pushing for independence. Weyrich stated upon his return that his visit to Moscow was, quote, "the most incredible experience of our lives," unquote. There, he worked with the IRG of the Supreme Soviet, a leadership body of the Communist Party. He says that they were unequivocally in favor of private property, a market economy, and the restoration of religion. The IRG was established by Andrei Sakharov, Boris Yeltsin, and others in the summer of 1989. By the end of that year, a training school had been established for candidates to put forward the IRG program. Their electoral success this year propelled Yeltsin to the leadership of the Russian Soviet Socialist Republic. He immediately began forging collaborative relationships with the deeply reactionary leaders of the Lithuanian Sąjūdis Party. The IRG has also served as a source of right-wing pressure on Gorbachev to dismantle socialism and the Soviet Union itself. Now recall, in the very first installment of this archive series, I analyzed another very important article. I read into the record another very important article dealing with Sąjūdis and the restoration of fascism in Lithuania, because Sąjūdis is inextricably linked with the history of Lithuanian fascism. And it's interesting to see Boris Yeltsin now hooking up with Sąjūdis, an ironic name. Perhaps instead of S-A-J-U-D-I-S, it should be spelled S-A, capital J-U-D-A-S, because it looks like that's basically where they're at, Sąjūdis. And it should be noted here, as before we proceed into this particular article, that in the Sean Gervasi article that I read into the record last week, the destabilization paradigm involves two basic elements. The first is external pressure, and I have spoken about that in the first two installments. The second is internal manipulation, and I'm going to reread a short section of the Sean Gervasi article. Again, this is called the Full Court Press, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union by Sean Gervasi. And a section of it reads, "The typical campaign of destabilization has involved two elements. The first is external pressure. The second is internal manipulation. The attacker is bent on creating disruption and turmoil in the target country, but that is only its first objective. The ultimate purpose is to produce political change, typically a change of government, a coup d'etat, or even a revolution. There can be no assurance, however, that disruption and turmoil will produce the desired political results. Therefore, in most cases, the attacking power also intervenes in the internal political process in the target country." And that brings us again to the article which I'm going to resume with, The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. We've looked at external pressure, including, in my opinion, the resuscitation of Star Wars and perhaps, the resuscitation of wider German military involvement. And we are now going to proceed with the Free Congress Foundation and its activities with IRG and Boris Yeltsin. And this is one of the vehicles that appears to be being used for internal political manipulation in the Soviet Union, the second of the two pincers described in the Sean Gervaisi destabilization paradigm. Continuing with this article, one of the key dangers in this agenda is the political vacuum it creates, allowing ultra-nationalist forces in a number of republics to increase their influence and possibly take power. Now, by the way, I should read the last couple of sentences again. The IRG has also served as a source of right-wing pressure on Gorbachev to dismantle socialism and the Soviet Union itself. One of the key dangers in this agenda is the political vacuum it creates, allowing ultra-nationalist forces in a number of republics to increase their influence and possibly take power. Such nationalist and fascist elements are already evident in Lithuania and the Ukraine. In the latter republic, the pro-Nazi Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, has gained influence in several parties and has mobilized large demonstrations in honor OUN leaders who abetted Hitler's war on the Eastern Front. Similarly, several Sejudis deputies served in German-supported military units in 1944, and Sejudis has made declarations against ethnic Russians living in Lithuania. According to some reports, Poles have also been denigrated. It should also be noted that radical reformer, quote-unquote, Boris Yeltsin has dallied with Pomyat, P-A-M-Y-A-T, the foremost Russian fascist group to emerge in the last several years. Pomyat's virulent anti-Semitism compares to the crude propaganda of the early German Nazi Party in the 1920s. Interrupting, we will take a look at Pomyat later on in this installment. Continuing. The FCF is not entirely disconnected from the history of the OUN. The treasurer of the FCF board is George Washington University professor Charles Moser, M-O-S-E-R. Moser also serves on the editorial advisory board of the Ukrainian Quarterly, published by the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, a group dominated by the OUN. The Ukrainian Quarterly has praised military units of the German SS and otherwise justified the OUN alliance with the Third Reich, which reflects the fact that the OUN was politically and militarily allied with Hitler and the Nazi occupation of the Ukraine. The OUN, an international semi-secret cadre organization headquartered in Bavaria, has received financial assistance from the late Franz Josef Strauss, the rightist head of the Bavarian state. Strauss also had a working relationship with Weyrich. Weyrich fed speeches by Strauss attacking Germany's détente with the USSR to U.S. senators who would then insert them into the congressional record. When Strauss came to Washington, Weyrich was the person who helped set up his itinerary. Another indicator of the anti-democratic character of the FCF's foreign policy is its co-sponsorship of Freedom Fighter newsletter. Freedom Fighter, edited by Charles Moser, is published from FCF offices in conjunction with Jack Wheeler's Freedom Research Foundation. It reports on and supports the military operations of RENAMO, R-E-N-A-M-O, in Mozambique, UNITA in Angola, the Nicaraguan Contras, and similar groups in Southeast Asia, Northern Africa, and Afghanistan. Particularly telling is their support of the South African-sponsored RENAMO operation, which even the State Department has denounced for its scorched-earth terror and murder of more than 100,000 Mozambicans. Pausing at this point, we should look here again at the affiliation between Charles Moser, described as the treasurer of the FCF board, and the elements grouped around the OUN. In Radio Free America number 1 and Radio Free America shows 14 and 15, we took a look at the OUN, its work with the Third Reich, its work with the Galen Organization, and its work with not only the Central Intelligence Agency when the Galen Group became part of the CIA, but also we took a look at it as a major element in the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN. We're going to take a look at ABN later on in this particular article. The anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations is an organization, as we shall see, which goes back to 1943, and literally a link with the Third Reich, and it is one of the major elements in the World Anti-Communist League, a major vehicle of both a major fount of foreign policy inspiration and a major vehicle for covert action in the Reagan and Bush administrations. We also took a look at OUN-UPA and the ABN in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Nazis and Anti-Semites on the George Bush Campaign that was aired in November of 1988. That also, by the way, based in considerable measure on work done by Russ Ballant, the co-author of this article. And again, the involvement of OUNUPA, which incidentally is also an organization along with the ABN, which has links going to the assassination of President Kennedy, as we looked at in Radio Free America 15. This is an organization directly connected, or linked, I should say, to Charles Moser, and Moser involved, as we see here, very much with FCF. That, again, from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, accessed in RFA Program 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, and that particular installment was aired on March 10th of 1991. And we're going to take a look at Franz Josef Strauss, who is one of Weyrich's associates, by way of fleshing out our understanding of the Free Congress Foundation. And by the way, we're going to return to an excerpt from that very same RFA broadcast in just a few minutes. A sharp-eyed listener hunted down the following connection for us. This comes from a book I've accessed many times in the past. It's called The Bormann Brotherhood. It's authored by William Stevenson. That's S-T-E-V-E-N-S-O-N. The book was published in hardcover by Harcourt Brace Jovanovich and was copyright 1973. Now, in this book, there's discussion of a top German Nazi leader named Hans Ulrich Rudel, who was a much-decorated Luftwaffe pilot during World War II. He then went on to become one of the main leaders in the German exile or Nazi exile community in Latin America. There's a good account of Rudel's activities in the landmark book The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee, published in hardcover by Little Brown, copyright 1997. And in the book The Bormann Brotherhood, there is a description not only of what Stevenson refers to as the Bormann Brotherhood, that appears to be the Bormann organization that I've alluded to in the past, but in particular, the last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, or the last political testament of Adolf Hitler, which was salvaged by Martin Bormann, and was used as the basis for renewed Nazi propaganda. And in that propagandistic effort, the aforementioned Hans Ulrich Rudel took this Hitler document that was accessed by Bormann and began distributing it to German youth and preaching the Nazi gospel to German youth. He was active in that capacity alongside of people like Franz Josef Strauss. Reading from the Bormann Brotherhood, we find, Rudel spread the gospel according to Hitler and as interpreted by Udo Valendi, W-A-L-E-N-D-Y. The latter rehashed most of the sophistries put forward by official Nazi propaganda in the 1930s to prove Mein Kampf was not an indictment of the Führer. A young neo-Nazi, he used the political testament that Bormann had waited in the Führer's bunker to get from Hitler, with the idea that after the collapse, the philosophy could be resurrected. Rudel commanded the Folk True Youth, or Volkstreue Jugend, which he wedded to other militant youth groups. They were lectured on the thoughts of Adolf Hitler. And then skipping down at just such a meeting, we read, this was a Brotherhood revival meeting. The group represented the new European youth, the Viking youth, and the Federation of Homeland True Youth. Their aims were described as, quote, national resistance to subjugation, unquote, and restoration of Germanic folk territory, unquote. The boys saluted with Heil Dir, hail to you, and drilled with pellet-firing rifles. Their hero for a greater Germany was Franz Josef Strauss, Bavarian head of the Christian Democrats, who has protested in the past that a nation cannot be forever treated like a naughty child. And in that regard was a fellow traveler of Hans Ulrich Rudel, one of the main above-board exponents of the Bormann Brotherhood, which is the name that Stevenson gives to the Bormann organization, and what I have termed the Underground Reich. This by way of gaining some perspective on the Free Congress Foundation and the political milieu of which it is part. We're going to return now to Radio Free America program number 36, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe. This installment from March 10th of 1991. And in turn, we're reading from the article, or I'm reading from the article, The Free Congress Foundation Goes East, co-authored by Lou Wolf and Russ Ballant. Again, that from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35. In the FCF's 1988 annual report, the Center for Catholic Policy states, quote, the public policy influence and activity of the Catholic Church in America often runs counter to the interests of Catholic laity. The Center for Catholic Policy seeks to instruct conservative Catholic laity how to become influential in shaping public policy stands taken by the Church, unquote. The FCF report says that a, quote, network of some 40 national Catholic organizations, institutions, and publications which share a generally conservative viewpoint, unquote, was formed by FCF in January 1988 and called the Siena Group, capital S-I-E-N-A. According to the FCF, again quoting, among the top priorities of the Siena Group in 1988 was mobilizing opposition to a U.S. Catholic Conference statement on AIDS policy which was favorable to the objectives of the gay and lesbian rights movement. Siena Group participants convinced the bishops to set aside the AIDS document. This last section of the article is a very important one. Well, the whole article is very important, and I'm going to analyze it in just a couple of minutes. The person that we're going to be focusing on here is an individual we spoke about in the aforementioned miscellaneous archive show, Nazis and Anti-Semites on the George Bush Campaign, that aired in September of 1988. This individual is named Laszlo Pastor, L-A-S-Z-L-O-P-A-S-Z-T-O-R, and he is an individual who's not only stems from fascist Hungary. It should be recalled that in addition to Germany, Italy, and Japan, the Axis also involved Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary. All of those countries were fascist and fought alongside the Third Reich against the Soviet Union and also the United States. Laszlo Pastor goes back. He was a Hungarian fascist. He also was heavily involved with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, that key and most reactionary element of WACL that I spoke about earlier. Speaking about his connection here to Free Congress Foundation, the inappropriately named Free Congress Foundation. Finally, FCF's, continuing here with Bolland and Wolf's article, finally, FCF's insinuation into the politics of the East must be judged by their selection of Laszlo Pastor to head their Liberation Support Alliance, quote, which seeks to liberate peoples in Central and Eastern European nations, unquote. Pastor's involvement in East European politics began in World War II when he joined the youth organization of the Arrow Cross, the Nazi Party of Hungary. When the Arrow Cross was installed in power by a German commando operation, Pastor was sent to Berlin to help facilitate the liaison between the Arrow Cross and Hitler. Pastor was tried and served 2 years in jail for his Arrow Cross activities after an anti-communist government was elected in Hungary in 1945. He eventually came to the U.S. and established the ethnic arm of the Republican National Committee for Richard Nixon. He brought other Nazi collaborators from the Eastern Front into the GOP. Some were later found to have participated in mass murder during the war. I would interrupt. That is the organization, the Republican Ethnic Heritage Council, that we spoke about in the aforementioned miscellaneous archive show, Nazis and Anti-Semites in the George Bush Campaign. Continuing here with Bolland and Wolf's article. The dormant Arrow Cross has surfaced again in Hungary, where there have been attempts to lift the ban on the Nazi organization. Pastor spent several months in Hungary. When Paul Weyrich later conducted training there, he was provided a list of Pastor's contacts inside the country. Weyrich reports that he conducted training for the recently formed and now governing party, New Democratic Forum. Pastor claims to have assisted some of his friends in Hungary in getting NED funds through his advisory position with NED. Recall that NED is the organization which, through LCRA, Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, and the closely allied Lithuanian Information Center, is re-injecting fascist elements into Lithuania under Sejudis. We looked at that in the first installment of this archive series. Continuing with the article, Pastor seems to have assisted some of his friends in Hungary in getting NED funding through his advisory position with NED. In 1989, he spoke at the Heritage Foundation under the sponsorship of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, a multinational umbrella organization of emigre fascists and Nazis founded in alliance with Hitler in 1943. It is led by the OUN. Pastor spoke for the, quote, Hungarian organization, unquote, of ABN, which is the Arrow Cross. And now, Bolland's conclusion here. Those leaders and cadre trained over the last year by Free Congress Foundation's traveling tutors were led by Paul Weyrich and company to believe in themselves and the goals set before them. However, they aren't on Weyrich's mailing list. However, they aren't on Weyrich's mailing list of key opinion shapers, so they aren't aware of his real assessment of them. Quote, but of course, communists will behave as communists, and they are going to try to undercut democratic forces whenever they can. Democratic leaders such as Havel, Jeleff, or Landsbergis are not entirely prepared to cope with such situations. In fact, former communists such as Boris Yeltsin appear to be more capable of producing real change than those Eastern European leaders are, mainly because as communists, they learned how to use power. There are only a few non-communists like Arkady Murashev who know how to do things right, unquote. FCF's involvement in Eastern Europe has begun as a result of their expertise in electing U.S. conservatives to office. This campaign expertise has enhanced their reputation in national politics. But their ties, which suggest an ultimately anti-democratic agenda, including their emigre fascist and Christian fascist involvement, have gone unexamined. That again from Covert Action Quarterly, or Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, and in turn excerpted from RFA Program 36, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, that recorded on March 10th of 1991. By the way, note that Gorbachev was still the prime minister in the Soviet, or was still president in the former Soviet Union, and Yeltsin was an opposition leader. By way of understanding some of the German hypocrisy and complaining about Men with Hill and the Echelon Network, we're going to turn to an article that was researched for us by a listener. This comes from Covert Action Quarterly issue number 63, and in turn it is headlined, or entitled I should say, Crypto AG, the NSA's Trojan Whore? ? It's authored by Wayne Madsen, and this concerns the NSA compromising of cryptographic information put out by a company named Crypto AG, that's a Swiss company, that entered into an agreement with NSA to permit the NSA to access information that was encrypted with Crypto AG information. And skipping down in this article, we see that Crypto AG was not alone in its deal with the NSA. And speaking here of a Crypto AG engineer who witnessed the NSA accessing of the trap door for the Crypto AG material, Crypto AG, again, is a Swiss firm. The engineer told another reporter, "The schemes and the cipher keys were created by them, the National Security Agency, and BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German intelligence service." And it turns out that the Germans were involved with, German intelligence was involved with the NSA in compromising the encryption technology utilized by over 120 different nations. Skipping down in the article, Germany's BND, too, has apparently cooperated with the U.S. encryption rigging scheme through Siemens Defense Electronics Group of Munich. And Siemens, one of the major German core corporations, inextricably linked with German espionage here in the Silicon Valley. Continuing, a previous director of Siemens called Crypto AG, quote, a secret Siemens daughter, unquote, while a former Crypto AG financial director said, quote, the owner of the firm, Crypto, is the Federal Republic of Germany. The Siemens connection to Crypto was remarkably incestuous. Siemens provided technical assistance for the machine manipulation process. Suspicion about the German electronics giant's role in Crypto's operations was heightened when it was reported that Siemens helped raise the $1 million to spring Hans Bühler from his Tehran prison cell. In fact, after revelations of the Crypto-Siemens association hit the Swiss press, Crypto's managing director, Michael Grupe, G-R-U-P-E, informed the employees that the advisory board to Crypto's board of directors was being dissolved. The two advisors, Alfred Noasad and Helmut Wiesner, were both full-time Siemens employees. With the world media describing the company as a silent partner of German and American signals intelligence agencies around the world, Grupe announced that, quote, Crypto is changing its profile, unquote. And again, that by way of underscoring the German involvement in these same types of activities. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.